1,043 days between Marc Marquez's last Honda win and first Ducati win. It was 168 hours between his first Ducati win and his second Ducati win. Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
There is every London bus analogy we could possibly make for something like this, as if I wasn't born and raised in the city or something. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 542 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. Glad you could join us as ever for another edition of the show. And yeah, MotoGP went back to back. We just had Aragon. We went to Misano for the first of two races and a test in the backyard of Valentino Rossi in the VR46 Academy. And Marc Marquez decided to beat that ass in their backyard one more time, just to make sure, you know, we were established what the status quo is, at least briefly. Just take some grip away, add a little bit of water, and see what happens. Because Marc Marquez has somehow won two Grand Prix in a week, as one does. And joining me to break all that down, as ever, is Mr. Cameron Buckley. Hello, sir.
Remember when I said last episode that he just needs to go and do it again? Took my advice. Just went and did it again. You know, it's not the winning. It's not the taking part. It is absolutely those two things. It's seeing the post-race and in the crowds, everyone wearing yellow at DEF CON 2. Staring off into the distance.
I think a lot of drywall got punched over the course of that weekend when they realized, oh no, it's raining. Oh no, Marc Marquez is leading. Oh no, not again. Please, big God, not again.
Between terrible decisions and having more confidence, he went from fifth to first in one lap.
Yeah, pretty wild. If I do say so myself, I think MotoGP, without filming all of it by accident, had accidentally recreated Donington 1994 in F1, but only on two wheels.
93.
Close enough. Joining me again on the show, as ever as well, is Mr. RJ O'Connell. How's it going, sir?
And I know why you all are actually happy. It's not that Marc Marquez just won back-to-back Grand Prix first time of C's like an H. It's because despite all the lowered basement level, mantle of the earth level expectations, your New England Patriots opened the NFL season of 2024 with a win that you didn't expect.
Not at all.
Look, as a New England fan, devoid of hope going into this season, a new top three draft pick being on the bench for seemingly could be a whole year, the way this is going, we take those. We'll take those. I cannot complain. We are two of the three of us here are New England Patriots fans, and we actually beat the Bengals 16-10 somehow. That was a thing. And we were 9-point underdogs going into that game, which
was terrible out on the field.
We were good. Defensively, we kept Joe Burrow's offense to 10 points. I mean,
You
take that all day long.
But RJ, you're wrong. I am happy about this. I am going to make it everyone's problem.
Yeah, we got to look awfully smug. And the Jets lost with Aaron Rodgers as their QB this time.
Okay, I can't even get happy about that. Honestly, at this point, it's just the expectation.
It is Ryan Eric King with two kinks if you want to get in touch.
Don't do that to him. That's not fair. Man.
I'm just glad my Bills showed up and beat an opponent they should have, even though they were asleep for the first 30 minutes of the game. Never in doubt, fellas. Am I right? I don't want to turn this into football 101. I mean, there's plenty of football podcasts out there. But where else are you going to get, like, motorcycle podcasts? Maybe a couple other places. And we're one of them.
Yeah, we are, apparently. So if you're into bikes, this is a good place for you for the next 45 minutes or so, because on it we'll be talking about the flag-to-flag race that wasn't really a flag-to-flag race, unless your name was Jorge Martin, in which case, whoops.
In case of emergency, break Bozo Jean Glass.
Not again, Jorge. Not again. Does anybody want to win this championship? Honestly.
Mark Marquez suddenly is only 53 points out.
He was 80 back before Aragon.
I'm not there yet, but it is funny how these three have just been Kobe-ing points into the trash all year.
It's like, who is going to F up the least may end up winning this championship. And right now, Mark Marquez has the momentum, as we say in sports world. So we'll talk about his win. We'll talk about Jorge Martin's bike swap and how it cost him so dearly. And the weird weekend of Pecco Bagnaia, where he didn't actually ride that well, but still ended up a massive points gain in the championship. Because if that isn't MotoGP in 2024 this year, I don't know what is, quite frankly. Also, we'll be talking a little bit about one of the only real big news story to come out of the Misano test is that, well, the press finally got wind of it, and it looks like it is actually happening. We are going to have radio communication in MotoGP next year.
We'll go into the sport's gone woke!
Yeah, in the words of certain journos, this is the worst thing to happen to the world since 9/11, the war in Ukraine, and everything else in between combined. Is it actually like that, though? Probably not, but we'll break down what that news entails on the back half of the show. But in the meantime, there are some places that you can find us if you're that way inclined. You're on youtube.com/Motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/Motorsport101. We're on Twitter at Motorsport_101. And if you'd like to follow the social media side that is no longer available in Brazil, you can follow us on Elon Musk's failed business investment at Straight Harrison 101, at RJ O'Connell, and at CBuckley917. Podcast itself is at Motorsport_101. You can follow us on Instagram at Motorsport101Pod, our website where all of those details are at, Motorsport101.com, if you would like to check out the blog section as well, with some extra stuff on some tech guy going to Aston Martin. That'll be up by the time that you're reading this. Ask Dre.
Will be out. Going to Aston Martin?
Yeah, that tech guy. Yeah, definitely him. That one, there'll be an Ask Dre up in the next couple of days as well, talking about all sorts in the realm of motorsport. And, of course, my extra written bonus thoughts on this very race we're about to talk about, so the San Marino Grand Prix. So you can check that out, motorsport101.com. Check out the blog section for more on that. And, of course, if you're really lucky, so you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. If you enjoy that as well, if you back us at the $5 level, you can get early access to all of our episodes. You can back us at the $10 level, and you can get access to the supporters club of our Discord server, where you can listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded. Thanks for Jason, as ever, for joining us, and anyone else that wants to join us in our chat, just back us at the $10 level and you can talk to us as we're recording the show. Isn't that fun? Right, without further ado, let's talk about how Marc Marquez won two Grand Prix in a week as we review the San Marino Grand Prix.
I didn't even think this day would come. Well, have you ever heard the saying about London buses? We only bring it up every once in a while whenever somebody unexpected comes around and wins something. When you wait a long time and then two come along at once. That's exactly what happened with Marc Marquez. He went back-to-back, first in Aragon and then at the San Marino Grand Prix of Misano. It was a wet race, but only via drizzle. But as the rain fell, chaos ensued. Francesco Bagnaia slowed down in caution. Jorge Martin was the only runner to change for a wet bike in the pit lane. And Marc Marquez passed five riders in two laps to take the lead, and he never looked back. Bagnaia followed along for a while, but eventually back up to take a second, with Enea Bastianini in third, Ducati taking a MotoGP Premier Class record, 18th podium lockout. Wow. You know, I really enjoyed Aragon. I didn't think we'd get another one of these this soon.
I don't think any of us did, especially given that, let's not forget, and I should have mentioned this in the script, I didn't, but Marquez bungled qualifying. He threw his front of the bike away in Q2 by turning far too aggressively on cold tires going into the penultimate corner, and had to start from 9th on the grid. And we were thinking, oh no, Mark's bungled another qualifying session and derailed his entire weekend again. He tried coming back through the sprint. He finished 5th in the sprint, which was an decent ride. Once again, the only big hitter who was able to really gain ground out there. But Misano is a really difficult technical track. It's very, very hard to pass at Misano, generally speaking. It's a slow track in general. There's not a lot of heavy braking zones where you can just send it on somebody. You've got to really pick your spots, and you've really got to nail your late braking to gain ground, especially in this era of dirty air and following bikes and what have you. So there is always one way you can balance the books when it comes to that sort of behavior: rain. And the funny thing is about this race is that going into Sunday, everybody was saying it was going to rain, and some of the more, you know, astute weather followers were like, it's not going to rain, because Emilia-Romagna is a region where the region where San Marino lies in Italy is enormous. It's like 300 kilometers wide. So they thought, oh, it's going to rain, but it'll miss them by a few hours. It did not miss them. Weather radars.
It only grazed them. But grazing them was enough. And watching Mark go around this track as well and practice and in qualifying until that crash. Very funny. Basically, every time he went through one of the fast sweepers, he would take a huge amount of inside curb. And every single lap, the commentators were terrified he was going to dump the bike, because he was just cutting the corner every single lap. It didn't take much rain. Mark, who was already starting to come through the pack, just chainsawed through the top five in the space of about a lap and a quarter.
He openly said that when you noticed the rain came down, his attitude suddenly changed to, I've got nothing to lose, let's go for it. And a lap later, he was leading the race. It was startling. Like as I said, it was Donington 93 all over again. I don't envy Francesco Bagnaia, because Bagnaia did an incredible job to keep his bike upright in this scenario, because this is about as dangerous and about as risky as it gets for a MotoGP rider. When the rain comes down and you don't know the level of rain and you don't know how much grip you have, when you're leading, you're the first person into that zone. You're the guinea pig. It's one of those situations where I really don't envy the leader. But at the same time, this is what Marc Marquez does better than any rider in history. These sorts of low grip, slippery track scenarios, Marquez takes so much risk. He can lean so much deeper than anybody else can. If anyone can keep it upright, know where the limit is, he's unstoppable. And that's what happened in this race, is that no one else was prepared to gamble like Mark was. And then when Mark got to the front and found his rhythm, he was outstanding. And even when the track dried up, because it did dry up in the end, because ultimately Mark broke the lap record in the back end of the race.
That's the thing, Dre. Like, Pecco was able to follow him very closely for about 10 laps.
Yeah.
And then you saw and it was funny because they were so much faster than one another in different parts of the track. Every single time they went through a left-hander, Mark pulled half a tenth. Every time they went through the final sector, Bagnaia would pull two of them back.
Yeah.
Like clockwork every lap. And then I think it was with about 9 or 8 laps to go, Mark drops the hammer, rips the lap record, and everyone else waved the white flag. But there was points at the end of that race where, again, like Aragon, he was 3/10 clear of the field. because it was he and Bastianini who were quickest down the stretch. He was 0.3 a lap quicker than Bastianini. He was on fire out front.
Yeah, and even Bastianini, he fell off hard at the end of that race because he was on the he was the only front runner on the soft rear tire, and the soft could not go the distance. Bastianini is normally the guy we hate as the tire whisperer in this sport. He got
the, too
he,
far with the soft. Yeah.
He chose. There was a debate going into that race. Do you go medium rear or soft rear, knowing that the medium will safely get you home? The soft might be quicker, but there's a chance it runs out by race end, and it did run out by race end. Obviously,
even with no the rain, because the rain should have helped with that.
No, I think probably just too much sliding given the wet weather and the conditions. Probably did the opposite in Aneas' case, most likely. He's normally so good on his rear tire as a rider, so smooth. And this one just didn't work out for him. So he ended up falling off hard, but still a comfortable third place in the end for Aneas. And a good weekend, maybe not a great one by Aneas' standards, but still solid. But no, I can only echo Cam's sentiment on this one. Mark was brilliant. And this is what he like, and Mark will be the first person to admit the rain won in this race. He probably didn't have the pace to stay with Bagnaia on raw speed alone, because this is Bagnaia's backyard. No one knows this track better than him, and he actually used that to his advantage, because there's a great quote at the end of the race when Mark is asked by Jack Appleyard in the post race press conference, "Well, how did you do it, Mark?" And he said, "Look, I just listened to the locals. The locals stayed out, so I stayed out too."
I actually like Bastianini's quote to that same effect as well. It's like, well, I knew I had to stay out because you can smell when it's going to rain, and it didn't smell like that. And so it rained just enough to grease up the track, but not enough to warrant a switch to a wet weather bike. And I feel like there is no better segue, unfortunately, for our championship leader than into the decision on the same lap that Mark comes barreling through the top five. Jorge Martin switches to his wet weather bike.
Oh.
And it just backfired so, so badly.
It's a rough one, and for those who don't know, because this was the first proper flag-to-flag race we've had in MotoGP since Motegi last year. I mean, Motegi technically was flag-to-flag, but it wasn't even really a race. It was a fully wet race by the time it actually got going. You'd have to go back to Austria 2021 for the last time we had a true flag-to-flag race, in my opinion. And for those who don't know, you can't run a dry weather MotoGP bike setup in the rain. You have to change bikes.
It's one of the things you watch actually in endurance racing with the bikes, because those obviously you can switch the tires out on them, but they have adjustable suspension still on those bikes where they take out the big wrench and they soften up the bikes to put them into wet weather mode effectively.
God, I love the big wrench.
The big wrench and the steel brakes rather than the carbon ceramic ones that MotoGP bikes normally use, because steel brakes work a lot better in the wet. So you can't really have a hybrid setup. You've got to just change bikes. Yeah. Well, depending on the weather, and in which case Jorge Martin decided this was enough for a change. And look, a lot of people have given Jorge Martin shit for this on the internet. I'm not going to be one of those people. This is one of those ones where, in my opinion, I think it was right on the line between wet and dry conditions. It was super close. If it rained just a little bit harder, the sticks would have been unusable.
I mean, he saw his teammate, Frank Morbidelli, who qualified well, put it on the floor.
Yeah, only a lap earlier or so. Frankie binned it, Pedro Acosta binned it, ironically by going offline, going on the green, which was still wet from cold because of the overnight weather, and the fact that the rain was settling on that part of the track because no one was running through their hot rubber on that part of the track. Acosta went off, got his slick tires wet and then tucked the front and crashed two corners later. Like, it wasn't, and to be fair, Martin wasn't the only one who changed bikes. A lot of the back end runners did. They gambled. Johann Zarco did. Alex Rins did it a couple of times. The Aprilias did.
Another horrible weekend for both Aprilia teams. They were nowhere all weekend.
Miguel Oliveira was the only one in the points all weekend. Fernandez was terrible. Miguel is just salvaging shit he can when he's the rain god of MotoGP. Raul Fernandez was nowhere to be found. Maverick Viñales was 16th. And Aleix Espargaró parked it with about eight laps to go. He said, you know what, enough's enough. There's no point in me continuing.
I would counter that to say you do not box opposite in MotoGP.
That's fair. And
if Pecco is continuing and you've got a points lead on him, you just shadow what he does. I mean, over here in the U.S., we have the TNT Sports broadcast on Max. Mm-hmm. And they were, as soon as they saw Martin put his, because he put his hand up first, almost like stop the race, put his hand up.
He forgot. This isn't the 2000s anymore.
Yeah. And commentary were screaming at him that this is a mistake. You shadow Pecco. And that's kind of where I am, because, man, he, on a weekend where Pecco probably didn't take as much as we figured he was going to, given that this is backyard, given that this is a place where he thumped the field in qualifying,
mm-hmm.
you bailed him out again. He got 1 point.
Again, this is rare, but I actually disagree with you on this one, Cam. I understand the decision. It's one of those ones where, again, the weather is nearly impossible to predict. You don't know how, I don't know about you, but as a guy who's lived in London for his entire life, you never know when that rain's about to get heavier. I was literally walking up my drive this evening, and it went from
I live in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Believe me. I get it. I get it perfectly. All four seasons in the space of 2 days
right,
here.
Right. Like, it's the same thing in London where it's like you get that misty rain where it doesn't really bother you until all of a sudden it's the big thumping rain and like, oh shit, I'm about to get soaked.
100%. So, dude, I have a car with like fuck all weather stripping left. It's 25 years old.
Yeah.
But for me, like just in general, boxing opposite in MotoGP is risky at the best of times. And in this case, it just didn't work out.
Yeah. And look, if Martin gets that gamble right and he's out in front of everybody else and wins that race, he's got a 50 point championship lead and we're all calling him a genius. Like it's. The problem is with a flag-to-flag race, and that's part of the reason why I think bike fans love it and why bike fans don't want this radio change that's coming up in a minute, which we're going to talk about soon. They want it to be a knife-edge decision. They want it. Because the thing is, right, when it comes to a flag-to-flag race, it's an all-or-nothing call. If you get it wrong, you're either going to crash or, because let's not forget, in MotoGP, a wet bike is about 10 seconds a lap slower than a dry one. If you get it wrong, your race is over. It really is that simple from a competitive standpoint. There's no safe way of handling a flag to flag race. If you're on the wrong side of that coin flip, you lose. It's as simple as that. And Martin, unfortunately, was the one who rolled the dice and got it wrong. It's an understandably bad call.
And I think he knew it right away. He looked over his shoulder and he just shook his head like, oh, shit. But once he committed to it.
The people that are coming in with me are the Aprilias and Alex Rins and Raul Fernandez. Well,
they came in, I believe, the next lap. So I think he was the only one in on that particular lap.
I believe so. I think he was one of the first of the big hit. He was the first big hitter to come in, and he was, I think, the first guy in general to gamble because he just simply put, like Martin said it himself after the race, I wasn't thinking about the championship. I was thinking about trying to win the race. He thought, if I roll the dice and get it right, I win this race automatically. And I take at least another 5 points out of Pecco, probably more. I can understand why you'd make that call, especially if you had a 26-point lead going into that race. You can afford to take a chance a little bit more than if your gap was, say, 7, which is what it is now. I get it. I'm not dunking on Martin for that call. I understand why he made it. It was just, unfortunately, the wrong side of a coin flip. And sometimes that happens in this sport. And if it rains a little bit harder and the slick runners are going off, or they're going, or they're tiptoeing around to get back to the pits, Martin's a genius. And then we're hating. And
I don't think so. Cause the cross, we know what the general crossover is, and it never got close. We're still seconds a lap away.
Yeah, but the way people were talking about this rain, though, this was the most unpredictable thing in the world. And by the time it actually got there, it was so light we could actually run a slick race. It's a lot easier to say this shit in hindsight, though, isn't it? Like, let's be frank here. Like, it's very easy to sit here now, days after the fact, and say, yeah, Martin got it horribly wrong. This is the thing, right? This is a general commentary cliche moment here. The phrase mental rain can fuck off and die, quite frankly, because it is impossible to tell, like, when the right moment to change is, in my opinion. I think it's one of those things where weather can change so quickly and so rapidly while you're already trying to nurse a 300 horsepower MotoGP bike that can do 220 miles an hour at will. And then you got to figure out, hey, is this wet or dry enough for you? It's a hard ass sport. So I can forgive Martin taking the gamble. It's a shame, but hey, welcome to the Bozo Gene, everybody. It's happened again. Pecco Bagnaia got away with riding a not particularly great weekend. He was beaten.
He got bailed out for Aragon.
He got bailed out for Aragon big time.
These two and keep bailing each other out. And Mark is taking huge wads out of them in points now.
It's a 53-point gap for Marquez with 7 rounds to go. We do this again in a week and a half's time.
Literally all of this, we're back here. We're running this race again.
Yep. And the weather is saying it's going to be dry this time round. Bagnaia probably wins if we do this again. Then again, I said that last week, and look what happened. He didn't win the sprint or the Grand Prix. Funny how that turns out. But he left Misano 19 points better than Martin did. So the gap's now down to 7 at the front again. I said to Martin, don't do anything crazy. Mitigate these next 2 race weekends and then wait for the flyaways where we know you're stronger. Of course, he gambles in the Grand Prix, loses out, and then blows 20 points to, or 19 say, points to Francesco Bagnaia.
He's talking about, I'm thinking about the race and not the championship. Please, God, think about the championship at some point.
As I've said to describe McLaren's current plight in Formula One, it's never too early to start thinking about the championship when you're a top contender. And we know Martin's a top contender. He has been for a year and a half. You know, I said this to my brother the other day when we were talking about this race before this podcast recording tonight. I said to him, you know what's funny about this? Beyond just Pecco Bagnaia just being the best rider in the world right now, and despite all the Saturday shortcomings he's had all year, if I wanted to craft the rider to be the exact nemesis of Francesco Bagnaia, it would basically be Jorge Martin. A guy who has got overwhelming, brutal, bullying levels of pace, and someone that will force you into riding at 100% or potentially force mistakes out or unforced errors out of you. Jorge Martin is the perfect counter to Pecco Bagnaia's brilliance as a bike rider. And yet Martin keeps fumbling this bag because he inherited Bagnaia's bozo gene. It's amazing how this championship's turning out. It's a hot mess.
Yeah, if you would craft someone without a bozo gene.
Unfortunately, like, there is no one in MotoGP without one who is fast enough to challenge these two on a week-by-week basis. That isn't, like,
it is what it is.
The fourth fastest guy in this series right now is Enea Bastianini, and he's had as many qualifying fuck-ups as Marquez has. And he's got one Grand Prix win this year.
I disagree. The fourth fastest guy is riding around on a Yamaha going, go faster, you piece of junk!
Which is amazing, because Fabio Quartararo had a very good weekend. Was what, eighth in the race? And like,
he could see the podium, which is a big improvement. However, every time it was a cut to him, it was just watching him rip through a corner and then get drag raced.
Yeah. You know who even had a better weekend by their standards? Take about LCR Honda, take about HRC test team.
Well, no. No, I'm not going to go with that.
It was their best weekend of the season.
Yeah. You know why we didn't mention Repsol Honda? Two reasons. It ain't Repsol Honda anymore at the end of this year. That's confirmed.
Now official.
That is now official. I quite literally don't know a world where the Honda garage is an orange. This shit sucks. But yeah. Also,
yeah.
As if it wasn't bad enough, both Johan Mir and Luca Marini are both were both out this weekend with illness.
They would rather have a tummy ache than ride that bike.
Yeah, yeah. Johan Mir, severe tummy ache. Luca Marini, general virus of some type, making him feel terrible. And well. I've actually got like a small draft together working on this, but this feels like rock bottom.
It is rock bottom. How can it be anything but rock bottom? I mean, look, Yoann Mir missed this race due to a severe bout of gastroenteritis. Luca Marini had a virus overnight on Saturday night that went into Sunday. And as an abundance of caution, he withdrew from the race because they wanted to make absolutely sure they were both fit, in inverted commas, to take part in the test that happened on Monday. Understandable. But yeah, the big news is the confirmation that Repsol and Honda are parting ways at the end of the year after 29 years as partners. They first were the factory supporting title sponsor of Honda back in 1995. Before Cameron Buckley was even born. And they are now no more. And I mean, you know what was the really sad thing about it? Was that Repsol, the statement that Repsol put out was barely a paragraph long.
In regards, 4 sentences?
About that. Yeah, just, you know, we've had a great partnership. We've had a wonderful time and we're moving on to other projects.
What's there even say?
Patronus, I guess.
Probably not, given that much like Yamaha with their Yamalube sponsorship over on their factory bikes, they advertise Pro Honda, which is their lubricant brand that they sell in Southeast Asia on Stefan Bradl's bike. What Bradl's bike looks like is probably going to be what the Honda looks like next year. Because why the hell would anyone sponsor this as a title sponsor right now? It's so bad.
The only way it could get worse is if they weren't this Ford ball.
Yeah, and there are series that Honda will bail from before they bail from MotoGP. The 2008 financial crisis proved that. And, they want to leave IndyCar, so...
Yeah, I mean, the part of the reason IndyCar went to hybrids was to appease Honda, because Honda wanted them to go to hybrids. And then, it's not gone down right.
And then Honda and Elmore had to foot the bill on fixing the shitty hybrid system they chose. So,
yeah, it's not
more
great.
More about that, probably in our award show at the end of this year. So I've got some things to say about IndyCar. Of all the trials and tribulations of the last 4 years or so, the it feels like it literally can't get any worse, because we know the bike is bad and we know that it's not the riders at fault. But you lost Repsol.
You lost Marquez
before that.
You've lost Marquez. You've lost Livioso. And now you've lost the brand partner and the identity of your team. I don't know the Honda factory team as anything other than Repsol Honda. That's been my entire livelihood since I became a bike fan in 1999, when I was a 7-year-old boy, and I was seeing the end of McDoohan's career, and the rise of Nicky Hayden and Danny Pedrosa, Casey Stoner winning the title in 2011, the birth of Marc Marquez's stardom, and the 6 world titles he won together with them. Of course, some Italian guy with an earring. Overall, and
it's all been erased.
It's now a chapter. It's a chapter. It's now that chapter book. Is now closed. Yeah, it's. I don't know what this means for Honda going forward. I agree with Cam. I don't think they're going to quit. Like, the ghosts of the founding of their company are still in that boardroom every day, and Honda, I know, are going to throw everything at this to try and rectify their problems, and I don't think they're going to give up on that now, because bikes are the spirit of this company. But it's a damning indictment that less than a year after Marc Marquez leaves your team, Repsol have said enough is enough, and that's it.
Your title partner of 30 years.
Yeah. And they're not gone from MotoGP altogether, so you can't even use that as an excuse. Because remember, MotoGP is going to sustainable fuels in 2027 when the new regulations shift. Repsol will be in that market as a domain and as a general sponsor for the sport. This isn't a Marquez power grab either, because Ducati have their long-term technical partner in Shell. So it's not going to be, oh, it's going to go to Ducati.
No.
Not in this case, no. This is just Repsol saying, there is no incentive for us to keep sponsoring this team. And that just says it all. It's like a bad breakup with someone who you know you still love and it just didn't work out. And trust me, I know how that feels.
Oh,
Sucks. It sucks.
And the two biggest sponsors on the Honda bikes from last year are now nowhere to be seen, with both Red Bull and Repsol gone. And I mean, there really isn't a lot of light at the end of the tunnel, given that a lot of a big factor in them being having the best weekend of the year, they weren't those who pitted.
Yeah.
A bunch of people in front of them pitted for wet bikes, and they were still miles off the pace this weekend. So
it stinks. What it is. It stinks, and there is no sign it's going to be getting better anytime soon. The other big story to come out of that test in Misano we had on Monday yesterday as we're recording this, it was we finally got confirmation. It's been rumored for a few years now that this was coming one day, and it finally has been leaked to the media, because the sport themselves haven't officially announced this yet, but there was obviously enough clout for the journos to run with it, that during Monday's test, MotoGP are going to be phasing in a radio communication system into the sport, likely starting next year's 2025 season. Apparently, it's going to be a 3-stage plan. Now, stage one, which is likely going to debut next year in 2025, will be a one-way system where Race Direction will be able to directly communicate with the riders. This is going to mostly be for the premise of safety, and to inform riders of any upcoming danger. 2026, they will likely implement stage two, which will be two-way communication between the riders and Race Direction, i.e. The riders will be able to talk back to Race Direction to communicate with them, which I'm sure will only go well with Simon Crafar as lead steward. Good luck, Simon. You may need it. Now, they haven't put a date or timeline on the third stage, but this is going to be the one that will likely set some people off.
Yes, because Joey Logano will win at the end of the third stage.
Yes, out. Anyway, the third stage is Team Torrida Radio with messages broadcast on TV with allegedly Dorna telling the media and the press it's, quote, for the spectacle. Now, here's the thing. We all know the greater big names in biking journalism by now. Some like to wear cowboy hats. Others like to own vans and whatnot. And they've all got one thing in common, besides being old and white.
Absolute foaming at the mouth rage at this decision.
Yeah. The hardcore biking fan absolutely hates this. I'm going to be real with you. I am not one of those people.
Gray, going against the grain, never.
Oh, please. I never do that.
So your case, because motorcycle racing has always been the one thing where it's always about the athlete trusting their own judgment. The most communication you get is along the pit wall, and that's it. And that's the way it's been for all this time.
Other than the messages that you can send on the dashboards that you've been able to send for years.
Yeah, see, the thing is, right? Okay, well, this is my general take on the matter. Stages 1 and 2, I'm absolutely fine with. Like, for the interest of safety, telling riders that there is danger on track is almost objectively a good thing. Anyone who's got a problem with that, I think, are crazy. Right? And to be fair, from what I've seen, most of the journos agree on that point. Like, the stage 1 is absolutely fine. I've heard no real beef of stage 2. Letting the riders communicate with race direction is probably a good thing on the whole. It's stage 3 where the sticking point is going to be, because a lot of these bike journos believe that the purity of the race and the purity of letting riders make decisions and not having the teams communicate with their riders or giving them information, that is the death knell for MotoGP. I think this is bullshit.
That is very sensationalist at the best of times.
Like, as Cam already gave away the secret sauce, we've been communicating via dashboard messaging in MotoGP for nearly a decade now.
Remember when Ducati tried to instigate team orders to Jorge Lorenzo?
The other unholy sin in bike racing with the old heads. We can't do team orders. Just say what you really want to say. You hate F1. Say what you want to say. Yeah, be honest about it.
Liberty Media is buying the sport. They're turning MotoGP into a closed shop, and now they're turning it into a whole thing where radio broadcasts are going to be broadcasting for the internet, for the intrigue, for the sassiness. Who cares about the sporting purity?
The sport is trying everything in its power to be Formula One, even as they say they're not. Why is anyone shocked at this?
Because, like I've said, I've been a bike fan for 25 years, right? If there's one thing that bike fans hate, it's F1 comparisons. They hate it. They think they're better than F1. They've always thought they've been better than F1. So when MotoGP takes an F1-esque move, especially because, and look, this is nothing to do with bike racing, but as a side note, it's worth pointing out that Formula One has absolutely leaned on broadcasting radio messages for entertainment purposes in the last 10 years or so. Hugely. So much so, we had FIA radio in 2021, and it was quickly scrapped. Wonder why. Point I'm getting at here is...
Do you want that in MotoGP?
I am indifferent to it.
Sometimes, I would say no. I myself am going to say no. However, at the end of the day, this doesn't really change much with knowing that the dashboard communication has been a thing for years. It's a different form of what we already have.
Yeah. And amazingly, it hasn't tuned bike racers off in droves like a 30-pound paywall has.
Funny how that works.
And look, I'm going to be real with you. The last thing this sport needs is to get uppity about radio messages. This sport has got far bigger entertainment problems than whether we can hear Marc Márquez talk on a radio in the middle of a race and it be broadcast to the public. We have ride height devices that the sport thinks is safe. And we're getting
rid of all that stuff.
Yeah, that one of the commentators raked Davide Tardozzi over the fucking coals for over the last 2 weekends.
Yeah, Davide Tardozzi, the guy that got an Aprilia engineer fired for having a bike out in public.
Can I just be quite clear? People are going to take pictures of your shit in racing. That's how it goes. Force India, or rather Racing Point, made an entire car off of it. They won a race for it.
Yeah. You made Lance Stroll a top six driver in Formula One that year.
Keep that in mind. It becomes important on a later episode of Motorsport 101.
It's so crazy. Man, I've got thoughts about that.
But yes, I'll be real with you. I don't see the problem. This day was always going to come for bike racing. As technology moves forward, as the game progresses, and as more and more modern tech enters the world of motorsport, this day was always going to come. Every sport in the world is now driven by data, right? And telemetry, and having communication with your riders and using it to get the best out of them and the bikes that are used. Sure, don't you think there was always going to be a day where the team would want to talk to its rider directly? Because they want to win. That's the whole point. This, like, trying to plaster bike racing and ultimately, you know, narrow it down to, the purity of it and letting the riders make decisions. And you're obviously using this recent flag-to-flag.
Top flight motorsport is all about the sanctity of the rules and lighting said rule book on fire while laughing maniacally. That is top flight motorsport in a nutshell.
This is all ego trips. This is bike racing wanting to be the best sport in the world via pure sanctimonious bullshit. This day was always going to come. It was always going to inevitably end to this, because if you're a motorsport team and you're here to win, you want a direct line of communication to your rider. No shit. Why wouldn't you want that if you're a team boss? If I'm Davide Tardozzi, if I'm Gino Borsoi, if I'm Alberto Puig, why the hell would I not want to talk to my rider in the middle of the race and give them information that might positively affect their race? Duh! That's a given! So, like, I don't know why people are going to get mad about it. And no, it's not going to kill the sport. And no, we are not in the luxurious position with bike racing where we can go at F1 and go, we can't copy them. Look how terrible F1 is. No, F1 is kicking our asses right now. F1 did it because it works. There's no getting around it. Like, the sport is getting 50 times MotoGP's coverage right now. And part of that is because it's gotten fans to latch onto radio messages and turn it into meme formats. It's part of the entertainment product. It's the way it is. Like, ignoring stages 1 and 2, which are just, I think, in the best matter of safety, good moves. Stage 3 is not going to be the sport killer that so many want it to be. It just isn't, in my opinion. 1, you're still going to watch. And 2, it's not going to kill the racing product. That's already been hurt by other shit.
Yeah, quite frankly. If you are getting so fucking uppity about radios killing your sport, look at your ride height devices, look at your aero, and pipe the fuck down.
Do not get
rid of those.
Not soon enough.
Yeah, we should have gotten rid of the ride height devices 3 years ago, let every alone time, in 3 years' time.
Every time I hear about, oh, why did you fall so far down the grid? Oh, my ride height device was stuck for 10 corners. And we just look at that as, oh, that's just part of the game now. Doesn't have to be.
Yeah, but Ducati don't want to lose their precious performance advantage because they invented the damn things. So we're not going to get rid of them because the sport's in a political deadlock.
No, it's because the sport was completely ill-equipped to understand and regulate an aero war. And here we are years down the line at the end result of that.
We would never think that, like, an aero war on motorcycles was possible.
Ducati started it in 2015. MotoGP had a better part of a decade to redo their rules and get their shit in order. They didn't bother.
Yeah, because in MotoGP, the inmates run the asylum, and the political stalemates that this sport often comes with has done more damage to it from an on-track product standpoint than anything that has been said or done in the previous 10 years since. But no, the radios are the problem.
That's right. The radio is going to turn this sport down the road of VAR, analytics over looking at that dog in them, not watching the games.
Take a long, hard look at yourself in the mirror.
Nonsense. Complete nonsense. MotoGP is back in a week and a half's time for the Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix. Yes, we're going by the regional name this time in Italian because we use San Marino already. So yes, we're doing this again next week. So sit down and enjoy that one. Maybe Bagnaia can actually win one out of the two this time round. So we'll see how that goes in a week and a half's time. Next week on Motorsport 101, two episodes, of course, Formula One in Azerbaijan, in the streets of Baku for the Azerbaijan Grand Prix. We'll see what happens there. And the season finale of 2024 in IndyCar. The final round of the championship at Nashville Super Speedway. Will it be Alex Palou? Will it be Will Power? Or will Scott McLaughlin kill Alex Palou via an unhealthy serving of Fugu?
Or will it all be rained out and postponed till Monday? Many possibilities are on the table.
We will have to wait and see. But until then, I've been Dre Harrison, they've been RJ O'Connell and Cameron Buckley. Until next week, thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
So Mark, remember what I said about just do it again? Yeah, just keep doing what you're doing.